behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. As always, we are joined by our super producer, Noel Miscellaneous Brown.
I like
stick
it.
With that one.
Yeah.
And most importantly, you guys are here, which makes this Car Stuff. So we jumped into our first Nuts and Bolts episode of 2016, and Nuts and Bolts is famous here around the office for being the podcast that never ends.
Yeah, it seems like it's the one that never ends. Yeah, we always have a pile of material left over at the end, and I would guess that today that will still be the case, but we'll probably limit it to two episodes, so we won't go into a third. But we are constantly getting new stuff. In fact, we've got more stuff that has come in between parts one and two that I didn't even include here because I know we're not going to get to what I
right.
had left from last time. So that's a good problem to have, though, because that means that we're getting some fantastic topics sent in from people all over the place, just comments as well, you know, like, hey, did you see this video, this new technology? There's, you know, the auto show circuit is happening right now, so people are forwarding a lot of, you know, latest technology news that's coming out of those, and it's really a fun time to be involved with Car Stuff, Ben.
Right, and part of this show, I'm springing this on you here, is going to be a little bit of an interview about, or a teaser, about the episode that you did for CES with our buddy Jonathan.
Yeah, sure, we can do that. Yeah, we'll talk about that just a little bit, and that way, you know, they can, our listeners can head over there and listen to that if they like. Because I know during that podcast, he was prompting some of his tech stuff listeners to come over and listen to our show because some of the topics that we touched on, you know, mimic what we talk about here. They're very close. They're closely related now, much more so than ever before.
Yeah, CES this year was definitely almost a car show.
It seemed like it. Yeah, there was a huge portion of it that was dedicated to cars and car technology. And, you know, whether that's apps or, you know, software upgrades or full vehicles, you know, that they were releasing because they were just cool.
Right. And if you haven't checked out our episode on it yet, please, ladies and gentlemen, check out the Faraday. Oh, man, the Faraday future car, the FF0.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool one.
Oh, that was. But before we get to that, we have some listener mail to catch up on.
Oh, yes, we do. We've got quite a bit. Do you have a few that you want to share, or you want me to jump back into my list? Because here's what happened last time. I had 10 pieces of, well, I guess I should say it this way. 10 Facebook suggestions from listeners and 10 email suggestions. And I thought I was going to get to all of them because I was going to do it the super fast way where I just got it, you know, line itemed out here. I only got the 5 of one group. I didn't even get to, you know, half of what I had. So
yeah, we have Miles, Ryan, Yijun, Bob, and Jason.
Yeah, that's right. And there's 15 more to come, actually 16 more to come. So we could do it quick. We could do it real quick style if you like. And we've got other stuff to talk about. I've got magazines in front of me. I got notes. I got all kinds of stuff.
I got some weird stuff too. So let's not stand on ceremony, Scott. Let's just dive right in.
All right. So let's go back to Facebook. And we've got John Jay who wrote in. And I wanted to hear about Motus Motorcycles, M-O-T-U-S Motorcycles. And this is interesting. They have a Crate V4 engine. They call the baby block V4, which produces 180 horsepower and 125 pound-feet of torque. And that's used in motorcycles, of course. But I think that, you know, they're talking about putting it on open-wheel cars and cycle cars and, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, man, what a fun power plant that would be to have in whatever project you got going on.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
And you can get it as a crate motor, so you could put that on anything. If you have a custom frame you want to add this to. So I think Motus is something that we should definitely talk about. It's descended, supposedly, from the small block V8. You know, like the they call it the American V4.
Okay. And I think they were working with some race car manufacturers recently, right?
Yes, true.
Pratt and Miller, who were involved in the development of the MST. So, we will definitely look into that because I think those are so cool.
How about this one from Paul L.? And Paul wrote in back in August of 2015. Remember, that was the other thing. A lot of these are coming from last year because we hadn't done a Nuts and Bolts since April of 2015. Mm-hmm. So this is late 2015, August 2015, and he wrote in and wanted to hear about the BMW Z3. The Roadster, I believe. That's he says that he has one. He's had it for about 3 years, put 35,000 miles on it. It's a load of fun. I know you and I have talked about that in the past, and we've consistently said, if there's a way to get our hands on a Z3 or a Z4, you know, the either one, I guess the Roadster or the shooting brake design, that coupe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that'd be so much fun to drive.
And we could do some more with the shooting brake design because that was one of the letters we had last episode.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. So we'll definitely get around to these. Charlie M. wrote in July of 2015 and wanted to hear about UTV racing. Now, these are the utility task vehicles, I think is what that stands for. But the side-by-side, so you can just, it's not like an old four-wheeler where, you know, you ride on the back like you would on a motorcycle almost on a single seat. Mm-hmm. This is, side-by-side.
Open body.
Exactly right. Polaris makes one called the RZR if you want to take a look at something, you know, an example of these, an excellent example of these. But I think that's really cool. It's fun to watch, UTV racing. Randy L. wrote in July of 2015 and wanted to hear this is a good one, the Nissan 240SX story. And this is one of those cars that you just occasionally see it around town. It's an older vehicle, of course. You know, the 240SX hasn't been around for a while. I don't have specs or stats in front of me right now. But hasn't been around for a while. This guy says that he's owned several, over the course of his driving history. Mm-hmm. And I think right now he's building one that is going to be a daily driver and kind of a weekend autocross car. But that's perfect for what these cars are. I mean, I see a lot of these turned into drift cars.
Right.
In fact, I've seen a few in parking lots around here practicing their drifting skills, which is, it's fun to watch. It really is.
But you can't do it in our parking lot.
You can't do it in what?
You can't do it in our parking
lot. Oh, no. It's way too crowded here in our parking lot.
Bummer.
Yeah. And even if it was empty on a weekend or something, it would be so dangerous with all those posts in the indoor parking you're talking about.
Can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, you know what? The indoor?
Yeah.
I think we have, but I this is one of my favorite topics, though, among the people here in the office, because there's consistently scrapes on rear quarter panels.
It's a problem. And you're right. We have talked about it before. And if I recall, it was mostly just me complaining on a rant.
That's probably me too.
Well, I've got a plan. I've been thinking about this.
Okay.
So what I've been thinking about is how difficult it is to retaliate when someone does a piss poor parking job, Scott. And you also have to be careful because if there's a row of open parking spots and there's one person parked askew, then we don't know if they had to park that way due to another car that has previously left.
So
you have to be careful when you judge. Except, my friend, in our parking deck, because there are poles every two spaces, which means that it's rarely going to be someone else's fault when you do a bad parking job.
Yes.
So I've got this idea. I want to see what you think about it. I want to make a fake parking instruction course. I want to make flyers for this.
Yeah.
I want to pretend that it's a mandatory thing that comes from the owners of the building. And so I don't know how in-depth I want to get with it. I think I'll just, like, issue fake warnings that look kind of official.
Yeah.
And then and then warn, you know, like, as your next notice if you hit three notices, you will be required to attend the course.
You're on the edge of dangerous territory with this one, I think, because I think you can leave a comical one that people, you know, have seen those over the years, you know, with Mickey Mouse or something,
right,
like,
yeah,
you know, giving somebody the bird or something, you know, funny stuff like that. But and written in a funny way.
Yeah, this would be written in a funny way.
Yeah, but still mean-spirited, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, though, if you add the management logo to it or something like that, that may get you in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, yeah, there might be a law.
Might be. I don't know. You should look at it. I mean, there's probably ways around this, but that's not a bad idea, though.
I guess the real question is, how petty do I want to become when someone makes me a little bit late? You know what I mean?
That's an interesting point you bring up, because for those that haven't heard, this is just a real quick version of it. It's an old building from the 1920s that we're in, a big warehouse. And the way that construction was back then, they had to have so many columns, these giant concrete columns throughout every floor of the whole building. That's our office space. That's the parking space, or the area that they turned into parking space.
Right.
So literally there's two parking spaces in between each column, and that means that the rows that you get to drive down are also two spaces wide. But that's a little consolation when you're trying to pull in, to a parking spot that has a Cadillac that's already there or a big pickup truck. there are some spots that I just simply cannot get into or out of.
Yeah.
And because of the vehicle that's already there. You have to kind of judge that way as well. And I noticed the other day, Ben, this is how tight it is. When I'm backing out.
Yeah.
There's a an added yellow pole next to the like a security pole of some kind for maybe I think it's maybe for a fire extinguisher or something.
Okay, yeah.
Next to the column that I park next to every day, just kind of out of habit, it's an out of the way spot. I chose this one particularly, but when I'm exiting, it's so tight that I have to plot exactly where I'm going to swing the wheel so that my mirror isn't removed by that column. And then I have to watch the left front to make sure that that doesn't clip the back end of the vehicle that's next to me. And thankfully, one of our coworkers here, Dylan, our image editor, he has parked next to me routinely, I suppose, you know, almost every day. And he drives a Mini. And that's perfect because, you know, we don't interfere with each other's space at all. It works out just right. It's like it's a symbiotic relationship out there in the parking lot. You know, it works.
That's cool. But listen, man, it's a jungle as far as I'm concerned.
You know, I've actually taken some photos of scuffed quarter panels and the columns and how close they are up there. I've got two or three right now on the floor that I'm on. So like a huge orange scrape down the side of a BMW 7 Series.
Oh, man.
Or no, I'm sorry, 5 Series. Like, we're talking from like the rear door to the back of the trunk. And then it's an orange and white. And then you look at the column right next to it, it's orange and white as well with missing paint.
You know what? That's because people are trying to gun it when they're heading out.
That's true. Yeah. You get a little distracted.
Yeah.
And it's going to bite you.
That sounds like an interesting thing to post pictures of, just a collection of scraped quarter panels.
I've started to gather them for the Facebook page, but I've got a small collection right now, to be honest. It's very minor, you know, like three or four photos. Maybe
I'll take some as well, and we can join forces on that. So look forward to hearing more about that, listeners, or tell us about your worst parking lot experiences, parking decks. Randy, odds are you probably heard our episode about the Nissan Skyline.
I would think so.
Yeah. That was a pretty good one.
Randy's a longtime listener, so yeah. The next one, and this is the last one of the Facebook group that I have, Allison B. And Allison B. wrote in about car paint. Now, she wrote in a long time ago, by the way. This is an early, early one. Maybe one we missed last April. I'll just put it that way.
Okay.
Car paint, but in particular, you know, not how to paint a car, not how to care for the paint or anything like that, but unique paints, like the color-shifting paints or the kind that take, several days to cure, you know, that, maybe old paint technology versus new paint technology.
Right.
All the stuff involved with car paint. And I know we've done one about, you know, custom colors that, you know, Rolls-Royce has reserved for certain individuals. Was it the man that became a paint, I think is the
name?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
It was that guy that made mattresses, right? That was his thing. But maybe like pearl paint jobs or chameleon paint jobs and just interesting trademark colors, maybe. That'd be a good idea, too.
Yeah, and we also talked about, this is one I wish we could cover again in the future, but we also talked about straight-out unpainted steel cars.
Oh, yeah, we had a bare metal episode, right?
Yeah.
And I still see a ton of those online. And, should I even say it? Should I even mention it again?
I think, okay, everybody. Scott has a personal horse in the race.
Yeah, I
do.
Yeah, my project car is currently bare metal and has been for a long time.
Yeah.
By the way, you know what? Maybe by choice. Yeah, by choice. And maybe we should even talk about that sometime soon because remember I had that oil that I was not selling by any means.
Right.
But I had really investigated what type of oil to put on the body in order to keep it in that condition and then not be cruel to whoever buys it next and have an oil-soaked metal surface that can't be painted.
Right.
This one can be painted over after it's cleaned. That stuff is remarkable. It's still holding up. There's no rust on that car. I've had it bare metal in my garage I've had the car for like 5 years now, Ben.
Yeah,
a long
for sure.
time.
Yeah.
Bare metal for probably three and a half of that, maybe three. No problems at all. Maybe where the garage door goes up and it drips some raindrops on the trunk area, I'll see a tiny little spot and I'll just quickly wipe it down with a Scotch-Brite pad or something.
So that's the weird thing is that although those cars look so unique and so cool, the maintenance on them is challenging.
But it doesn't have to be. I mean, like what I've got right there, I mean, of course, I'm not taking it out in the elements, but just for it to sit in my garage and not have any kind of surface rust at all. after 3 years. That's pretty remarkable. And I'm not like out there keeping up with it routinely either. It just works.
I can't wait till you drive it down to the office.
I'm not parking in that structure, by the way. There's no way.
It's a land yacht. It's
no
a Newport.
Way. Yeah, we're not bringing an 18 and a half foot long Chrysler into that parking lot. It's not designed for it.
Yes, but to that point, Allison, we have looked at some different paints. I think you'll really enjoy The Man Who Became a Paint if you haven't heard it yet. Currently, I think BMW's most expensive paint job is the individual pure metal silver, which doesn't sound that impressive. Do you want to know how much it is?
How much is it?
It is a $10,300 option for the M6 Grand Coupe.
Wow. Now, I know that sometimes they'll offer special edition Corvettes or something with a slightly different red paint or something like that. You know, like they have the traditional Corvette red, and then if you want like this maroon-looking color, it's like an extra couple $1,000s, but nowhere near $10,300. That's a lot of money. Now, I think there's a couple of versions of this too we can talk about. There was a car that was in carbon fiber, I believe, that it cost more to leave it unpainted than to paint it.
Oh, wow.
Because they clear coat the carbon fiber and it gives it that, I guess, a racing look, you know, like more like a true race car. And then there was another one. And I really want to say this was the Porsche 918, the spider that's coming out, or that is out, rather.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the paint on that one was even more than the $10,300. I'm not sure. And I think it's like a liquid silver something. You know, they got a special name for it, but very, very expensive option.
Okay. Here's another thing that goes into this. There's marketing and exclusivity, right? So maybe there's a special edition, to use BMW, maybe there's a special edition of an M3 or something, and only a very small number of these special editions have this once-in-a-lifetime paint job.
Sure.
And people buy it just for the prestige, not because it's a better paint.
Yeah.
Or not because it does, not because it matters at all to the rain, the sleet, the wind, and the snow, but the on the other side, there's a lot of really compelling material science behind how this stuff is crafted and how it's applied. And that's not even talking about crazy custom paint jobs like homemade racing stripes. Oh, we did that older episode too about painting your car yourself with a brush
or a roller or something like that. And with varying results, right? I mean, some people, it turned out fantastic, really, really nice job. And other people had a miserable experience with it.
Yeah, you have to be obsessively, obsessively meticulous.
Oh, yes, very much so. And also, we've done one on plastic dip in your car. That fad has kind of come and gone, hasn't it? I mean, I rarely see that anymore. I sometimes will see wheels that are plastic dipped now.
Mm-hmm.
But I rarely see a car that has clearly been covered in that material.
So maybe we will return to paint and see. I think we also did the world's most expensive paint job. You know, I'm trying to recall the name, and I'm wondering at this point if it was a paint or if it was a polish. Because there are two very expensive ones.
We did an episode that was about the most expensive car things and whether that was, you know, a car polish or an oil change, you know, whatever it happened to be. You know, certain types of wax that, you know, the canister of wax was $10,000 just for the material.
It's so weird.
That's not even somebody applying it to your car. It's just the material cost that much.
Yeah, that's just parts. That doesn't count labor. Anyway, so there, it may surprise some listeners to learn that there is such a wealth of fascinating, weird stuff about paint.
There's a lot more than we've even touched on here, I'm sure. But we'll definitely get to something about paint in the near future. I promise you that, because it's an interesting one.
What's up next?
All right, let's jump into some of the email. Hey, you know what? How about this? Before we jump into the email, let's talk about a couple other things. I got a few other little side note type things here that I want to mention. And one thing that you know, we've done here in the office recently is we've switched over to this. I don't know. Can you call it like a new way of putting out material? It's a faster turnaround on our information that we put up on our main site. It's called How Stuff Works Now.
Yes.
And or now How Stuff Works.
Now got howstuffworks.com.
Yeah, if you want to be exactly right, Ben, sure. But Since we're trying to drive traffic to it.
Right.
All right. So one of the stories there that I edited was about mobile driver's licenses that are coming out of the state of Iowa. And they've got this pilot program that they invested, I think it was like $40,000 in last year, at the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
And only 15 people, and they're all state employees. I think they're Department of Transportation employees, but some maybe, you know, just state employees. I'll leave it at that. I can't remember. But they have these driver's licenses that were issued on smartphones. So you carry your smartphone with you. You don't have to carry your wallet with, you know, your ID and everything in it if you don't want to. You can just have just your phone, because right now you have to carry both, I guess, because everybody wants their phone with them. But when the officer walks up to your window and asks for, you know, license, registration, ID, you can hand them your phone, and it looks just like a driver's license, and they can swipe to look at the back of the license for any information that might be there.
Yeah.
There's also a feature that I think is really cool. It's instead of just a you know, two-dimensional shot of your face in the corner, this is more like a three-dimensional thing where the head can rotate like three-quarters of the way around or something like that. So you can get the profile view. You get a much better sense of, is that really the person on this ID? And other things that can happen is, like, you know, if you're over 21, that part of the license can be highlighted and very clear and very crisp. The DMV can update this automatically, you know, through their system. You can also make changes. You can request changes for them to make, I believe. But so if you were trying to, let's say that you're trying to drive on a restricted license of some kind, a revoked license or whatever, the DMV could say, no, this person, as soon as the judgment comes down in the court or wherever that comes from, they could add a big red banner that says restricted or revoked or whatever, so that, you know, the officer that, you know, has just stopped you for speeding or whatever infraction you've committed would know right away that this person is on a restricted license. They wouldn't have to go back to the car and review that information, you know, via their computer and just try to match up, you know, what's going on. It's just it's a different way to do things. And I don't know if I totally agree with this yet, because, well, people lose their phones. There's that concern.
Yeah.
There'd have to be some type of technology that would keep whoever gets your phone from, you know, accessing that information. But that may be in place already. These security measures may be there.
You're a Bluetooth exploit away.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're exactly right. I think there's a lot of problems with this idea, but there's also a lot of good things about this idea, and I hope they find a balance sometime soon and start to stretch this program out into other states.
Well, it's also, I would say, given the current trends, it's also inevitable that we will see more and more things converge into stuff on a phone or a device, and then ultimately, not to get too sci-fi about it, my friends, ultimately, the phone thing or the PDA or whatever that we carry around will become something that is inside us somehow. Because future generations are going to look back on one of the biggest technological revolutions that may occur in our lifetime, and that is freeing our hands from being the means of interaction with technology.
Oh, you're blowing my mind, Ben. Inside that technology will be inside our body.
Somehow, which to me is even more frightening.
And so here's the thing. You've probably heard that somewhere. You've read it somewhere. But like me, we're still left scratching our head. How is that going to be possible? But if we knew the answer, we would be billionaires soon. Because it would be the way that it would happen. But we don't know exactly how that's going to happen. But it's in the cards that's kind of the way things are moving.
Right. And we don't know the timeline. But this right now, the technology involved in having a license on your phone has some very, very strong pros and some very frightening cons. Mm-hmm. So I want to know what you think, listeners. Would you, if you had this ability, would you do this? It'll be much more convenient than a trip to DDS or DMV.
Yeah, that's right. You don't ever have to do that again. You never have to go to the DMV, really.
Better hold on to your phone, though.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the other thing is, like, you don't have to worry about carrying your wallet around, I guess.
Uh-huh.
That, to me, is a huge – well, it's a pain in the rear, Ben. See what I did there?
Scott Benjamin, ladies and gentlemen.
I consistently, always remove my wallet when I get into a car because it's not that there's so much cash in there or anything like that. It's just that – you have to carry around so many cards and so many forms of ID and all that stuff with you all the time that it gets bulky and it's uncomfortable if you're going to be in a car for more than 5 minutes.
It also may be may have some bad effects on your back over time.
Oh, sure, because you're sitting in an angle all the time, and it's just the way it is. But honestly, I'm 50-50 about this right now, and I'll tell you, I'm leaning more towards the side that there's more cons than there are pros to this. But I am hopeful that they work it out, that something, you know, that's agreeable to just about everybody will come of this.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm agreeing with you. In some ways, I don't know if I would want to do it, you know, because I want to see the statistics of how often phones are stolen.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing statistic. It happens. I don't even know. I'm not even going to guess right now, but it's every second.
So then instead of just having your phone stolen, you have your ID stolen, and then you also probably have your banking information stolen.
Oh, probably, yeah. I mean, it becomes an even bigger asset for you to hang on to, or something that's much more troubling if it's lost, I guess.
What's next? What's next?
Let's see. How about we jump back into some of our listener email that is sent in, and I got about 11 of these, so we can go through them kind of quick because there's a few other things still, and you know, I'll tell you ahead of time what I want to get to.
Okay.
There's an article that is in the latest Popular Mechanics that I really want to talk with you about, because it's something that's right up your alley, my friend. It's definitely something that it's expensive, but maybe we'll someday get to it. All right, so let's get back into the email. And Jonathan A. wrote in September of 2015 and said, to continue the Legend series, I thought you might like to talk about Richard Petty, the King. NASCAR.
Oh, yeah.
Why haven't we talked about Richard Petty? It seems like...
how have we not done that?
I don't know. I know along the way we sure have. I mean, for sure.
We've mentioned him, sure.
Yeah, because we talk about NASCAR frequently on the show. So, yeah, we will definitely do a Legend series episode on Richard Petty.
Great idea.
Of course we will. And here's one that I can't remember who wrote this in. I tried to search for it in my inbox, but I couldn't find it. This is just something that's been on our list forever, and it keeps getting bumped down and bumped down. You remember someone wrote in and said they would like to hear about piano makers that also built cars.
Oh, yeah.
There is a weird connection between, like, old-world craftsmanship, you know, like old-world craftsmen, I guess, that built these really amazing pianos that also decided to get into coach building. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it that way, right? But
yeah.
There's several of these. I mean, there's a connection between Steinway and Mercedes-Benz. There's all these really weird, just maybe, you know, 5 or 10 cars that were built, you know, at the beginning, the dawn of the automobile, really, where, you know, these people got into it and they said, well, we're going to work on, you know, making this car. It's going to be this amazing V16 powered car that has an incredible body on it. And then, like, you know, the great earthquake in San Francisco destroyed the factory, and we never heard from them again.
Yeah.
The cars, I mean, you know, the manufacturers. They went on to build more pianos, but not any more cars. Stuff like that happened, and really fascinating history behind it. So I think if we dug into that, that would be a good one to do.
Yeah.
And there's more than one, by the way. There's
a lot. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, that's one that has slipped off the list, but we'll try to get it back on. Eric B. wrote in August of 2015, and this is an interesting one. It's a tricky one, though. And okay. I don't know if we can do this one or not. I'll maybe leave it up to you, and we'll talk about it, Ben.
But, okay, yeah.
How do you name a car? Where does a car name come from? It's really tough. I mean, what goes into that? What's the research that has to happen? Mm-hmm. What does it mean? You know, like you have to do all kinds of studies, you know, case studies to find out if it means something dirty in another language.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm thinking. We talked at least about how difficult it is to name a car, but we didn't delve into some of the science and the exhaustive research behind naming it.
Yeah, the psychology behind the whole thing.
Yeah,
too.
That's a good word. Yeah,
and you know we've talked about kind of the alphabet soup version of this. You know, like where people manufacturers are coming up with you know, letter and number designations for their cars,
mm-hmm.
rather than, you know, calling it the Corvette or calling it the you know, the Camaro or whatever.
Yeah, which I think cleverly cuts down on some of that stuff, but then also, you know, an evocative name has this sort of value that cannot be defined easily.
Oh yeah, I mean, you look at the Dodge Ram pickup truck, how tough that is. You know, it's
right.
Like it's a tough name.
Yeah,
you know, it sounds good, but then like, where do some of the other weird ones come from?
Right,
some of the bizarre Well, there's a million examples of this, but
sure.
But I think it's a good idea. It's so tricky that I don't know. We'll think about that one, Eric. And then of course I'm going to mention this guy's last name, Rudy Smith.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We talk about
yeah.
Rudy all the time, but Rudy wrote in August of 2015, and this is another one I cannot believe we haven't talked about, Ben.
What?
Food trucks. Food trucks are so popular.
In fact,
we had for a while in this building, we had food trucks that were servicing this whole complex because they didn't have the food court area open yet.
Right.
So every day, two or three food trucks would come around. We had a schedule, mm-hmm. and they were always something different. It was something interesting and unique to the area.
Usually really good.
Yeah, they were good. And there's a lot to that. I mean, the design of the food truck, what they are capable of doing inside a truck and what they're not capable of doing.
Ah, two things. First, I was cracking up while we were talking about names of cars because I was remembering that one we made up. What was it, the Ford Face Punch or something?
Or Falcon Face Punch.
Falcon Face Punch.
Yeah, the Falcon Face Punch.
And then second, we had a food science show that Kristen Conger from Stuff Mom Never Told You and I did, and we had an episode about food trucks. So I'm even more surprised that we didn't do it for car stuff.
You didn't carry it over.
But I didn't.
You know what? I've watched a few of those, and they're hilarious. So if you get a chance,
man.
What was it called? Food Stuff?
Food Stuff.
It's a video series, and pretty funny stuff. You guys were really good in that. I like that. You both are good at improv type stuff, so it worked out really well.
Too kind.
The listeners should check it out. Besides that, I mean, we should definitely just talk about these because they're beyond the era of the old, the roach coach that would come around. You know, it's not like that anymore. There may be examples of that somewhere here and there on construction lots somewhere, but we're talking about the type that show up to festivals and things like that.
Yeah, we should talk about the specs, the capacity, the companies making food trucks, because in many cases, you might see someone that has a custom modification, right, on a delivery van or something. And then in other cases, you'll see a manufacturer that has created their own sort of brand of food truck. And also, weirdly enough, there's so much red tape from city to city, from state to state, for a food truck to operate. And Georgia is a very difficult, or at least Atlanta specifically, is a very difficult place to operate a food truck.
Yeah, so we could even talk about licensing and all that stuff. I mean, I just watched a movie recently that featured a food truck prominently. It was a movie, I think it was called The Chef.
Yeah, Chef with Jon Favreau.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty good. I mean, but it kind of shows you what it takes to, in a very quick way, to refurbish an old one and bring it back, and then
they have a montage.
Yeah, well, they did. They had a montage, a cleaning montage, and then kind of traveling around the country with the sun. It was a good story.
Yeah, but, that's cool. Yeah, I'd also like to see food truck races. That's it. It's my last thing.
Hey, why not? All right, so let's see. Let's move on. Martin G wrote in August of 2015 and said, "Oh, this is a good one. The Mustang variants. So not just this basic Mustang and the Mustang GT, but more like the Boss version or the SVT or the Shelby or the Roush racing version.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some really fantastic Mustang variants out there that go back, of course, to the very beginning. Clayton wrote in July of 2015 and said he would like to hear about boutique cars boutique cars versus custom cars. Like, what's the difference? I mean,
what gives?
Yeah, what is a boutique car versus what is a custom car? And I like that topic because I like boutique cars. I do. I mean, they're fascinating studies, I suppose. Like, just some of the weird things that they incorporate, some of the extra touches that they can do when they're only going to build 10 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a lot.
And we've talked about some of the companies making those as well.
Yeah, we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, along the way. I know we have for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another one, let's see, from June of 2015. Oh, this person goes by the name Icy Grasshopper.
Okay.
So Icy Grasshopper.
Good to hear from
wants
you.
To hear about, and you can veto this, Power Wheels. Now, Power Wheels are those little kid toys that are electric and, have a little battery.
Oh, yeah.
And the kids drive them around in the yard or the driveway or whatever.
Oh, I'm well aware of not having one of those as a kid.
That's right. I remember I had access to one, but I didn't own one.
Yeah.
The thing, and they were a little bit past my time. It was, I was a little big to stuff myself into them. So, it's actually, there's kind of an interesting history behind them. And now you can go online and see kids with massive collections of Power Wheels cars that you might go into the garage and they've got, and I know this is like, I don't know how to put this, but some spoiled rotten kids have, you know, half of the garage is dedicated to their Power Wheels collection. And you can see kids that have, you know, 18 or 20 cars. And I know that's the parents saying, ah, this would be cool if he has a collection like this. And also, you know, I can show this off to my friends. It's kind of an interesting thing. Or you've got the mini version of the car that I have out in the driveway for real. You know, that's kind of cool, too.
Jeep,
whether it's a Jeep or a Corvette or whatever it happens to
and
be.
Yeah, those miniature versions are perplexing to me because they're not as expensive as the car they are inspired by. But still, for a toy, the price is astronomical.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. I mean, we're talking $300, $400 sometimes. And, you know, well, okay, well, there's a lot
we'll,
to talk
we'll get
about.
Into it.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe not a bad idea with that one.
Yeah, no veto on my part.
All right, Aaron S. wrote in, and Aaron has written in many times, but Aaron, in June of 2015, wanted to hear about the Gumpert Apollo. Which is a supercar that's relatively unknown.
Speaking of boutique cars.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's a really cool car, really bad name, yeah, that's one I think we definitely should cover. But
yeah.
In depth. I know we talked about it, I think, after its last... didn't it break a record at the Nürburgring? I think it did.
It did. We talked about it in the Nürburgring. We also, I feel like we've talked about it a little bit when we did hypercars.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we touched on it. But it is a beast, especially the R version.
And you know what? When you say Gumpert Apollo, it was in the news for a while. You know, like it was making the blog scene, I guess, for the automotive news. And then... it kind of went away. So when you say it, everybody will kind of like, their eyes will open up like, oh yeah, I remember that. But
mm-hmm.
you just don't hear about it much anymore. So maybe it's worthwhile for us to do a full episode on the Gumpert Apollo.
Yeah,
I think
that's
a very good idea. All right. Now, Henny wrote in from New Zealand. And I believe in the past I have called Henny Henry. So I apologize for that. But, Henny wrote in and said, in August of 2015, he wanted to hear about the Morgan Motor Company. Now, I think we've talked about the Morgan three-wheelers.
Uh-huh, we have.
I feel like that. Now, I don't know if we've ever done an episode on the Morgan Motor Company, but there's a lot of interesting stuff there. And that's one of those cars, Ben, if I ever found an old Morgan that was in need of some help.
Uh-huh.
And I had the time and the, you know, the cash to,
the wherewithal
to do it. Yeah, exactly. That's a beautiful car. I mean, just about everything in their product line I like.
I
consistently like their products, so... Morgan Motor Company, that's a great suggestion.
And I love the history shows when we can take a look at the origin story of a company, and then I'm always happiest when we can go into the future.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work out, but I would love to check it out.
It's a very good one. Yeah, I like it. All right, and then let's see, let's move on. So Ben H. wrote in August of 2015, and this one for sure we're going to get to. This is quite a tale. This is the, and I'll do my best with this, the 1978 to 1979 Expedition de la America. And I'm Americanizing that, by the way. This is a 21,000-mile, 122-day trip that was taken in 1978 and 1979 that went through the Darien Gap, which is, you know, the Pan-American Highway break,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Between, what is it, Panama and Colombia, I think. It took them 30 days just to cross the gap, but they went through it with Jeeps. They took Jeep through there. So
yeah.
They're taking four-wheel vehicles through this area that is it's a jungle, and it's a harsh jungle.
Right.
And they were literally hacking and cutting away the trail that they were to drive on. And then as they were, you know, making the slow, slow progress, because they went from North and South America, and they started in South America, and they started at Cape Horn in the south, and they went to the farthest point of land that they could reach in the north. And again, 122-day trip, 21,000 miles. When they were cutting their way through that 30-mile gap,
yeah,
this is how long it took. You know, I mean, again, I think I already told you, 30 days. 30 days. I don't remember how long the gap is.
The gap itself is like 100 miles long.
Okay, so
99 miles long, 30 miles wide.
All right, so I misspoke earlier. I meant 30 days to get through it and about 100 miles, so roughly that.
That's crazy.
When they got to the end, the trail that they had cut behind them had already overgrown. Like it was gone. The trail's gone.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really tough trek. And this whole trip is, you know, is definitely something worthwhile talking about. I mean, because there's got to be a lot of adventure in this type of thing.
That is amazing.
Yes.
Sign me up.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then the last listener email thing that I've got here before we get to something else maybe is another one from Rudy Smith. And this is, I'll just tell you, it's from a long time ago, but it's something I all the time think about when I'm on the road because I see these now. High-end pickup trucks. Rudy suggested this a long time ago, and I'm going to have to stretch my memory here with exactly what it was, but I think it was like his brother-in-law's friend had taken a job delivering vehicles, you know, for people that had ordered, you know, through this Ford dealership. And some of these, you know, like Platinum Series Ford pickup trucks are getting up into like the $75,000 range, or, you know, as high as, you know, $96,000 and up is not unheard of for a pickup truck. You know, if you're talking like a Platinum Ford F450,
right,
with all the bells and whistles,
all the options,
everything you can get, you're talking ballpark $100,000 for a pickup truck. And here's the thing. When you start to realize what those cost, you know, like even the base versions of them,
right,
and you look around in traffic and you see a Ford Platinum Edition truck, that's something special. It doesn't necessarily jump out at you, but it is something special.
Right.
And there's a lot of, you know, other manufacturers do this as well. It's not just Ford. So I think there's a whole market of trucks out there that a lot of people just don't know exist.
Upmarket trucks. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we can also tie into this one if we wanted to, like the King Ranch editions and, you know, the special edition trucks that come out that, you know, garner a higher price, but they're unique in more than just price. They've got a lot of interesting features.
Yeah, I like that. And to be candid, I want to hear what you think about this, listeners. I go back and forth on the high-end truck thing. If it is something that affects performance, then I can understand. And, you know, so as always, I would say the same thing to anybody buying a vehicle. It's your money. Get what you want, whatever makes you happy. But to me, there is a disconnect because it's like pickup trucks are like blue jeans, right? They are made to do a task or to help you work. Mm-hmm. So high-end blue jeans, you know, like the people who pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for jeans, there's nothing wrong with that, but it is not what blue jeans were originally intended to be.
Can I say something?
Yeah,
here? This ties right in with this.
All right.
We've talked about this building several times now. Maybe even in this podcast we've talked about
here
this,
we
right?
Go.
did you know, and this is not a great news, by the way, but
right,
they're in our building downstairs, early part of December of 2015, there was a smash and grab robbery,
yeah,
of a high-end jean shop in our building.
Mm-hmm.
This number blows me away. They stole $30,000 worth of jeans out of that store. So we're talking like five or six pairs of jeans that they took, and it's worth $30,000. No, I'm kidding. It's not five or six
pairs.
I'm joking with you about that. But $30,000 in jeans.
That's crazy.
That's incredible. That's probably like, you know, all the all the old types of jeans that I wear, that's probably like a you know, year's worth of production at the factory.
Right. Yeah.
Not just what's on the shelf.
It's strange because that was a very organized crime too. It wasn't just an impulsive smash and grab. They had three different cars. They had stolen those cars. So this was clearly planned, and I don't know if they got caught.
Crazy, isn't it? I don't know either, and it's just a weird thing, but I had to mention it when you mentioned high-end jeans because, to me, it is kind of – I understand some people just feel the need to do that, but I don't ever think I need to pay more than about $30 for a pair of jeans.
I mean, again, you know, do what makes you happy. Scott and longtime listeners and Noel, you guys already know how I feel about this. You can just assume and your assumption is correct.
But listen, also, so we got to tie this back into the trucks.
I feel like
I have to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you said – if it's performance, you kind of understand it. Go ahead and do the upgrade. You know,
right,
I'll pay
right,
for that,
right.
But I'm not going to pay for a luxury item on my pickup truck. But what if you're hauling horses across the country all the time?
And, that's a really good point.
You spend
a lot of time,
and you have to have a truck. You can't get a Cadillac to do that. I mean, maybe an Escalade could or something, but you want a pickup truck. You know, something that's sturdy, dependable, rugged. You know, every other feature that you need, but it's not comfortable. You want something that's going to, keep you comfortable on those long cross-country trips. Or, mm-hmm, you know, if you're in it, you know, 365 days a year, that's going to be something that's important to you. So every vehicle has its own market, whether that's a micro niche market or what. But
right,
but I am seeing a lot of these platinum pickup trucks on the road and other versions of that from other manufacturers too. So there's something to that, that niche market.
Oh man.
People are paying for it.
Yeah, you're right. Scott, I'm bummed.
No,
this
I don't
is
mean
our last thing.
Oh, this is, you're bummed about that. I thought you were bummed that I was, I kind of took the other side on that one.
No, I'm not bummed about that.
Oh, okay.
That's fine.
Oh, okay.
That's fine.
Well, yeah, this is an epic show we've been doing here. This is a long time. We've been, sitting across from each other at this table.
Hey.
It's worth it because we're going to wrap up with something that is incredibly cool. And I told you this was in the latest edition of Popular Mechanics. And it's the one that, what did it come out here? Between December and January this year.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, this is so cool. I pitched this at today's meeting, by the way, our now idea meeting.
Right.
This is an evasive driving course that is offered in West Virginia.
What?
And yeah, evasive driving. Now, you may be a little bit puzzled by what that means exactly, but I'll tell you. And now, it's expensive. Again, this is offered in West Virginia at the Summit Point Motorsports Park, and it's called the BSR Evasive Driving Course. It's $1,700 for 2 days. However, the people that attend this, now it's open to the public,
okay.
So that's one thing.
You just need like a valid license.
You can go, but the people that generally go to this thing are either bodyguards.
Law enforcement.
Chauffeurs. Mm. No, not law enforcement because they have their own thing.
That's right.
Special forces.
Wow.
So that gives you an idea of what these people are going to learn at this course. So there's a small article here. It's just really one page, and it's titled "How to Drive Like a Secret Agent." And it says without all the bothersome espionage to slow you down.
Oh, we gotta go. We gotta go.
What a cool course this is. It tells you how to evade, another vehicle if when the bullets start to fly. And where's the safest place to be if that happens? You know, if when you get out of the vehicle, the safest place to be. How to ram a blockade in front of you. How to safely ram and get through successfully
yeah.
a blockade that appears in front of you. What to do if the driver of your vehicle is shot while you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this in a real-life example. I mean, the instructor will be driving, suddenly slumped over the wheel or, passed out, in air quotes, passed out.
Right.
But with his foot firmly planted on the fuel. What do you do? I mean, and they tell you exactly how to regain control of that vehicle and how to handle all these situations. And it's a fascinating course. So, of course, there's way more to it than that. And there's, again, like this blockade thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They show a multiple vehicle blockade and they tell you exactly what speed you need to hit and when,
uh-huh.
When you need to accelerate, when you need to brake. Where you need to hit that car specifically to get through. Of course, alternates, always look for alternates, but it's about keeping a level head on your shoulder and how to get out of just terrifying situations.
We have to do this.
Yeah. It really seems like something that is worthwhile. I mean, it's not for everybody. I mean, I
sure.
would imagine that it would cause some trauma to some people,
mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot going on here, but just thinking about the situations that you could be in, it might, spark some fear in some people that are prone to that. But if you are one that is just genuinely fascinated with it or want to gain better car control for whatever reason.
Sure.
This is a great course. And I'm not selling it or anything like that, but I think this is something that we could talk in depth about in an episode and it would be fun.
Agreed. And you have made my day. I'm tempted to see if they have a certificate, because that's something I would frame and put on a wall.
Maybe you could hop a train to get to West Virginia and take this course. That'd be the ultimate, wouldn't
big
it?
Coal town. I mean, big coal state. So they have a lot of rails there.
You're right.
Just like the possibilities are so cool. We can't tell everybody about this though, because if everyone is schooled in these techniques, then our certain set of skills will lose some value.
It becomes ineffective, really, at that point, because mm-hmm. they can just counter that. Now, the other thing is, I wonder if you're able to even mention who's there with you, because I bet a lot of people don't want to be recognized when they're there.
Right.
That
makes sense.
Just keep a low profile.
So probably no certificate, no class pictures.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you could probably tell who's there just as general public and who's there as, like, part of special forces or a chauffeur that isn't. They'll probably never tell you who they're driving,
right.
What celebrity or, whatever, a superstar of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
But just imagine the scenarios that could happen. And this course will tell you how to work around that problem.
All right. Yeah. Well, I need to know. So,
well, again, that's called, if you want to look it up, it's BSR Evasive Driving Course. And again, that's at the Summit Point Motorsports Park in West Virginia. So take a look at that if you want to, and we'll try to get that on our list of potential topics for the near future.
Right, and that we can also look at some other evasive training courses. How do people learn to drive like James Bond or like stunt car drivers?
Yeah, now this can't, yeah, because this can't be the only version of this in the whole world or even in the United States. So, you know, it's something we should definitely look into.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben, I know we're wrapping up, but
yeah.
It seems like I got more stuff to cover. We're
Me
not going to do.
Here
we're not
we
going to do
again.
A part three. But is there anything extra that you want to toss in there? That or should we just cut it right here?
I think we may have to cut it because I want to save some of this stuff and do it justice, maybe in future episodes. But perhaps the next time we do a Nuts and Bolts, listeners, we can have Noel play some sad music and just do an honorable mention of the topics we didn't get to.
Yeah, maybe. But you can see we've got a pile of them, and that was just a fast laundry list of, you know, 20. And you can imagine that along the way, we're going to find some things in the news or whatever that we're going to throw in there as well. So if you heard yours mentioned and we said we're going to get to it, we it's on the list. We're getting to it. And there's others out there that we didn't read today that are also on the list. We're going to pepper in our own ideas as well. So, again, this thing always ends up a list like that could stretch us through the rest of the year, really.
Yes, and so another chapter of Nuts and Bolts draws to a close. We'd like to thank everyone, especially John, Paul, Charlie, Randy, Allison, Jonathan, Eric, Rudy, Martin, Clayton, Icy Grasshopper, Aaron, Henny, Ben, Rudy, again, and, you know, as always, thanks to everyone that we didn't get to, but we got through a lot today.
That's impressive, Ben. You just did that off the top of your head, too. You don't even have a list in front of you or anything. You just remember all that stuff.
Right, yeah. I totally don't stop you partway through and say, like some Nazi interrogator in a World War II movie, give me the names.
No, you're like Rain Man over there. It's great. Good job.
Thank you, I think.
Yeah. No, that's a compliment.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. So tell us what about these interested you the most. We found so many great topics today, and several. We always know it's going to be a good day when we find a couple that surprise us because we haven't done them. Richard Petty. I'm still baffled, Scott.
Yeah, food trucks. So there's a million of these.
So we're going to hunker down for some research, hit the road to check out some stuff firsthand, and we will be back next week, as always, with a brand new topic. In the meantime, if you want to see some stuff that didn't make it to the air for one reason or another, check us out on the internet. We are CarStuffHSW at both Facebook and Twitter. You know all those old episodes we mentioned? You can listen to them for free right now. Every single one we've ever done.
Yeah, on carstuffshow.com. And, man, what are we up to now? I didn't even look at the number, but we're well above 700.
I know. We have to start figuring out what we want to do for that 1,000th episode.
Yeah, you're right. What does iTunes cover? They cover, like, the top 300, I think?
Yeah.
So if you want the full list, check out our website, and that's where you get the whole thing.
Mm-hmm, carstuffshow.com. And if you want to take a page from your fellow listeners' book and send us an email directly, then we'd love to hear from you. You can write to Scott and Noel and I directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.